If you're going to go for the big one, the main thing that you want to do is not have the blind leading the blind. Now, that's the big mistake that I think most people do. Like, you're going into this 100 unit and you're nervous because you're thinking to yourself, how am I going to make sure that the past investor's money is safe? How am I going to make sure that I don't lose money? How am I going to make sure that this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen? Well, the main way that you do that is to have the blind not leading the blind. You want to make sure that you're partnering with somebody else that's been there and done that. So if you're able to feel comfortable partnering with people, then commercial real estate is going to be for you, because these larger deals, you're always in partnerships.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Five Talents Podcast. I'm your host, Abel Pacheco. I interview the top commercial real estate investors and industry experts so you can learn from their experiences. So if you're an investor, a high W-2 earner, or real estate or tech sales professional that wants to invest in real estate without having to manage properties or leave your day job, then this podcast is for you. Or if you're already investing in real estate, but you're doing it part-time and you want to become a full-time multifamily or full-time commercial real estate investor, this podcast is for you too. You're going to learn a ton. You will learn from real life multifamily investors and other professionals in the industry. They're going to share their blueprints for success. And I'm super excited that you're here. So I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, hello. Abel Pacheco here with the Five Talents Podcast. We are super excited today. We have a special and amazing guest, Mr. AAA, Adam A. Adams. How's it going, man?
It is going fantastic. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for taking the time. I'm humbled and appreciative that you would join our podcast. And I think you've got a lot of value to provide our network today. And so if you're listening, if you're viewing this, whichever one, catch it on the road, I would suggest taking a moment, grabbing a pen and a piece of paper at another time, either if you're driving or now, because I think Adam is going to drop a lot of nuggets that would really help you. So before we jump into it, Adam, let me really give everyone a few nuggets if I could. And then just, you know, man, I'd love to hear your full story as well. So I know you are known as AAA, Adam A. Adams. And I remember that because we have my first name, your middle initial, right? And thanks a lot for sharing that nugget with me, man. So AAA, you've educated thousands of investors. A lot of real estate conferences. I've met you more than I think once or twice. It's a couple of events. You do radio, podcast interviews. You got coaching programs going on. You have an amazing meetup group at meetup.com. You have done, I've seen you on a few podcasts, like not just interviewing, but hosting. So the Creative Real Estate Podcast, it's one of them that's listened around the world, hundreds of thousands of downloads. You've got a lot of efforts that go into educate and inspiring investors, man. And that's awesome. So, you know, thank you very much for giving back all the education. How long have you been doing that? You know, just the podcast part of it. And
the podcast started 3 years ago. Yeah. And I don't know what my deal is, but I've always been a teacher. My mom remembers when I was very, very little, I was always teaching and coaching and mentoring other kids, or and my sister and my brother. Like, I was always trying to just make sure that they could skip all of the things that I went through. And yeah. It's just kind of funny when I started the podcast, I have an education degree. So that's what I love. It's not IT. It's education. I love teaching people. Yeah. So
I benefited from a lot of it, and so I appreciate it. Us and the listeners.
Appreciate that.
And I don't want to completely cut you off, but I want to make sure we get through. There's other nuggets that before we start getting into it. So you were also named Master Investor by Think Realty Magazine. You're a 3-time Hall of Fame winner from Real Estate Mentor for Success in Multifamily Syndications. Meetup.com, they recognized you as one of the top 6 meetup organizers in the world. So you're cranking away on that side. And then as far as background, 1,400 doors $100 million of real estate assets for Blue Spruce Holdings.
So Blue Spruce, Blue Spruce doesn't run all of those. I've been passive as well. Mm-hmm. I've been a passive investor. Like I sorry to cut you off. I feel like passive investing is like the cream of the crop, right? That's where we all want to get. We all want to have money and just leverage other people's time, experience, resources, knowledge, the other people's teams. And we want to be able to collect like total passive checks. And you can't do that with rentals. Some people mistakenly think that it's passive income. It's residual income, but even if you have a property management company, it's not completely passive. The only way to be passive is investing in the stocks or investing in a syndication as a passive investor. So I've done that on quite a bit of doors. So most of the doors that you mentioned, of those are, I'm passive. I'm actually just a passive investor.
Yes.
So, but we manage and operate probably about 400 out of the 1400 you mentioned.
As Blue Spruce. And the other part of it, passive, that's ideal because I do want to ask some questions for the passive investors that are listening today, like how you evaluate things, but we'll hit that in a minute. I mean, that's ideal. That's my ultimate long-term goal for as well. Sure. I'm in about 800 some odd doors. Half of it I started as a limited partner passive investor, and now I'm just co-sponsor of trying to work my way into other larger opportunities. So that's outstanding, man. So you've spent a lot of time giving back, and it's clearly evident by all of the things that you're doing to sow into your community, coaching, education, all these different platforms. You've raised a ton of capital along the way, millions of dollars from a lot of private investors. So you've been helping, your investors, a good financial steward as well. So man, let me tell us more about your story. I've heard it more than a few times, so I apologize to make you repeat it, but just a short background so everybody kind of knows who you are, at least from our network.
Yeah. In the pre-interview, we were talking about, was I a second generation real estate investor or a third generation real estate investor? I was a second generation real estate investor, which is still kind of funny because for me, it seems so natural to go into real estate investing, when I got the money to be able to do it. It seems so natural that it may as well have been a third or fourth generation because I was actually collecting rent when I was 9 years old, literally from one of our multi-unit properties. A tenant was a little bit late on the rent and they could pay right then, but my dad wasn't going to be there. And it wasn't far from our house. So he said, hey, can you walk on over there and just get this check? And to me, it wasn't a big deal, but now that I remember and look back on it, I mean, this has really been in my blood. Like real estate investing has been something that's in my blood. And I don't want the listener who didn't grow up that way to think that they're missing a piece, because you're not missing a piece. For me, it was just the only way that I knew. For you, you already know that you want to do it. And so in this podcast, hopefully we're going to give you a few tips, tricks, and strategies that is going to get you there. So it was funny when I was in college, I was a music education major. So I was going through school and my dad, he bought me a piece of land, which I thought was epic. I was like, that is so cool. Like I was not going to be able to think I could buy land for a little while. And I got it for a Christmas present. Is back in 2005. I got it for a Christmas present. And then what's funny is his CPA told him, they said, hey, you're going to have your son pay for that. And my dad was like, what? I'm going to have him pay for it. And so he told me, and I was just like, Dad, how much? Because I was mad. I was like so mad. I was like, Dad, how much? I'm like shaking my head, rolling my eyes at him. And he's like, the lowest I can go is $100. And I was like, how am I going to come up with $100?
Come up with $100.
I'm in college. I can barely pay for my books. I'm here paying for my own car payment, paying for my own house, paying for my utilities, which is a lot, paying for my food. I never knew how expensive it was. You always said I was going to eat you out of house and home, but thanks, now Dad. I get it because thanks, I Dad. Really do eat a lot. And so anyways, I somehow came up with $100 and grudgingly, but I owned a piece of America. And I felt like that was pretty cool. I thought that was really awesome. You know, short tangent, not long after I got a tax bill. And so all of a sudden the county wanted me to pay some amount of money, and I didn't know what I did wrong. I was like, Dad, why did I get this bill? And he goes, that's your taxes. Okay, well, do I have to pay it? And he's like, of course, Adam, you got to pay it. It's your taxes. I'm like, but I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not even living there. What would I pay for? And anyway, so he kind of gave me the lesson back then while I was in college on what all of that stuff meant. So technically it was, at the time, it was a liability, if you read the book Rich Dad Poor Dad, because it wasn't putting money in my pocket. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was taking money out of my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But something really cool happened. In 2007, I got somebody, they were putting some, you know, they were laying some electricity in those lots, and they were also doing like cable and stuff like that. I don't even think internet was around back then, but they were kind of laying stuff out to and adding more infrastructure so that you could build and people could kind of live up there or have better amenities, water and all that kind of stuff instead of wells. And it made the land valuable. It made the land like incredibly valuable. And so I sold it and I made more on that one sale than I had ever made in a single year. Just mm-hmm. like any year of my whole life, bartending, you know, when I was going through school, I was a bartender. In the summers, I would either sell door to door or I would landscape with my dad. But I made more than I had ever made in a single year. And I just thought to myself, like, why was I such an idiot? Like, my dad has been telling me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I understand like the power, because I barely lift a finger and I made more than I made in any single year of my whole life. And that really stuck with me. It stuck with me so much that year in college, I decided to wrap up my college and get out and just get my degree as fast as possible. And just so I could have something to show for my 5 years of playing.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so I got my little degree and jumped out, and I never used it. I never became a music educator. I never taught junior high band. I never did anything with the education, because real estate seemed like my way to grow. Regardless, my second deal was I started managing apartments for somebody else, made him over $1 million, like in his pocket, $1 million. And just from a year of my efforts,
yeah,
half part time, mm-hmm. made him $1 million. It just, the power was there. So I started getting into apartments. That was my first asset class after that land.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started doing multifamily. My first single
How
family.
How old were you?
25-ish, 20, however old you are in 2007, 8, 26, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your first deal was a passive investment, or you did some work on that deal as an active participant?
My first deal altogether was just a piece of land. Then I started managing properties after I sold that, because I wanted to learn what it was like to actually yep. manage properties. I felt like that was the piece that I was going to be missing. And if I was going to do it on my own, I needed that education. So I actually took real estate, a couple of different real estate courses in college, a real estate law and a real estate in practice. And you can get your license with it. I never even tried for my license, but I got
the education,
highest.
25, yeah. 26, you're bam. And then yeah. like, I'm just going to jump into it. Okay.
It should be important for me to share this, and I've never shared this on a podcast before, but I often get like lower scores than other people, because I'm dyslexic and I'm ADHD, and like I can't bother with school, right? But in these two real estate classes, I literally was the top score that has ever been. Like, I had over 100% in both classes, the top score that he's ever had. And it was just because I was doing every extra credit, and I got basically 100 on everything that came through. And it's not because I'm smart. It's because I was interested in real estate. I mean, I had just sold this piece of land for a significant amount. I'm like, I'm taking courses on this. I want to understand more. I want to make sure that I can make a lot of money doing this. So I paid attention.
Yeah. The universe was definitely telling you, hey, Adam, yeah. this is the right way to go.
Yeah. That's a quick bit of my background. I'll just say that in 2015, I started doing more tax deeds, tax lien, tax deeds. I had a couple of money partners and I was kind of like the workhorse for them. So they were the smart ones leveraging OPT. I was just leveraging OPM. So, that was me, but we were doing some tax deeds and we doubled our money every now and again. And what ended up happening is I decided that I needed to get back into my roots, which is multifamily. Yeah. My dad owns self storage units. I grew up with multi unit properties. I collected rent when I was 9, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of decided I'm going to have to get back to my roots. And so it was like 2016 is when we really started getting into multifamily, about fourplexes, threeplexes, fiveplexes. 2017, we started syndicating.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of our syndications, which I think a lot of your listeners understand.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But even the small ones, I think a lot of people are kind of torn in between. Should I start small? Should I start with a 3, 4, 8, 10 and then build my way up to my first syndication? And you know that there's differing opinions on both. I usually say, man, go for it. But I sometimes fail to mention also that I was doing single family for 10 years prior to me going for it, right? So what's your maybe a short take on that?
Yeah, well, I love that question because the truth is it really does depend. It's one of those, the attorneys always say, it depends, it depends. That's their favorite answer. But that really is the answer here because for some listeners, they're never going to be willing to wrap their head around 100 units. They're just never going to want to. They're going to want to feel what it feels like small before they go there. No matter what, that's just their mindset is going to be stuck there. For the others that are comfortable with me telling them that it's okay to just go straight to the big one, I want to share with that person just kind of a couple pieces of advice. So if you're going to go for the big one, the main thing that you want to do is not have the blind leading the blind. Now, that's the big mistake that I think most people do. Like you're going into this 100 unit and you're nervous because you're thinking to yourself, how am I going to make sure that the past investor's money is safe? How am I going to make sure that I don't lose money? How am I going to make sure that this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen? Well, the main way that you do that is to have the blind not leading the blind. You want to make sure that you're partnering with somebody else that's been there and done that. So if you're able to feel comfortable partnering with people, then commercial real estate is going to be for you because these larger deals, you're always in partnerships. But the big mistake that a lot of people make, they go and they get educated. They even take a coaching program and then it's somebody who's never done it before ever and somebody else who's never ever done it before either. And they're like, we're both taking the coaching and you and I both want to do this. And so let's just partner. And I personally am one person who's going to say that's not a recipe for success. Regardless of if you have a coach and consultant on your team, if they don't have ownership in it, they're not going to be able to be as involved. And there's a few things that we missed. So we were doing blind leading the blind, even though, listen carefully, I've been in real estate my whole life. Like I grew up, I was 5 years old and I knew that we had rentals. I was 6, I knew we had rentals. I was 8 and I was mowing the lawns at the rentals. I was 9 and I was collecting rent at the rentals, right? So like this is something that was always a part of me. I started owning real estate 15 years before recording this. I started owning multifamily 13 years before recording this. So for over a dozen years, I've been a landlord. And I've had multifamily and single family and flips and different things, right? But still, when we did our first, what we call syndication, where it's a much larger property and you're raising, you know, $1 million or whatever it is for you, it was 3 partners and none of us had done a syndication before. One of them had done rentals for years. One of them had done flips for years. And then I had been involved for a dozen years in real estate and still, there was some issues that we came into that we wouldn't have had if we didn't go blind leading blind. Now, we paid for a coaching program, $40,000. We all were in it. We all studied it. We all had read books. We listened. We all studied podcasts. We all had some experience. But there were still issues. There were still problems by going to the wrong market. That was one of the problems. Selecting a property that had a property manager in place. And we just decided to just keep that property manager in. That was a problem. Buying a property that was too small and we had to have a recourse loan instead of a non-recourse loan, that's a problem. Also, not having economies of scale, because I really recommend that you try to do a 70 unit or 100 unit if you can. I want you to do 100. But for those of you who can't wrap your head around it, go ahead and do what you need to do to feel comfortable. Because if you're not going to feel that way, then you're probably going to lose money. So learn the way that you want to learn. Some people do it slow and steady by doing a single family, then a duplex. And then they're like, holy cow, I'm thinking about a fiveplex. And oh my gosh, we're looking at a 12 unit. This is in the double digits. This is going to be crazy. Well, that is a fine way. It's just going to take a long time. The other way is to do what you've done, Abel, and you go passive in a couple of deals, and then you co-sponsor a couple of deals, and now you're ready to sponsor your own deals. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a process that gets you into the 100 units much, much faster, and I believe gets you to be able to become completely financially free much, much faster. So
yeah, you get wrapped up in too many of the small ones, you're definitely taking a lot of your time. It's going to be more work, more effort on your side, a little more single family-ish. And, you know, the dollars are definitely going right back into the property, or I've experienced on the smaller ones anyways. And on a syndication, you're trying to raise that capital up front to make sure the CapEx improvements are baked in before you close the deal. And that's the renovation anyways. So yeah, those are amazing nuggets, because, you know, that question comes up to me often. And, you know, some days I'm like, well, just go bigger, start as a passive investor. But then some people go, I don't want to do that passive side. I just want to be a GP. And I go, man, you failed to learn, or failed to, you know, recognize hear my story. 10 years of single family. I did like you did, Adam, which was, I joined, you know, 4 to 5 programs. I dropped my 65K, went to a ton of cities, did all the networking events, did all the conferences. And even then still, I was like, I'm not going to try a $10 million deal on my own. Let me partner with somebody who's been there, done that. And yeah, you know, it's definitely been a big acceleration for me even now. So anyway,
for sure, if the listener has the capital to go passive first, it will benefit them. Mm-hmm. If they don't have the capital, then they can still probably partner. There is an issue with many passive investors. They just, they say, I'm not going to invest with anybody who's never been passive. And so you will be running against that. If you don't have the ability to go passive at least once, you're going to have some investors that just won't invest with you. However, if you can kind of move forward in a deal with a team that's strong, and because you don't really have the capital, but you can kind of put your, what is it, your sweat equity in, mm-hmm. that's still going to be a really good way for you to learn. And there's going to be a lot of people that will still passively invest with you. Just know that some of them won't.
Yeah. I like that advice on if you don't have the money to go passive. I give that same, something similar, and I like the way you said it, because it's, yours is different. But the people that I say, man, if you don't even have money to get an education program, you definitely need to do something active. In the years prior, like, I bought and sold stuff off Craigslist, and, you know, I was flipping cars. I flipped, you know, golf clubs to start, cars, watches, and then, you know, all kinds of just random stuff. And I, you know, had some money, and that was how I bought another single family house. And then single family house was how I refinanced out, pulled 50K cash and invested in a deal pass, you know, a deal passively. And so, you know, you got to do something active if you don't have any money. And also benefit, man. Okay. So this might help us to move to this next topic, because I really want to understand, and you do so much on the virtual, the meetup, the education, the podcast. Those people that don't have cash, don't have money, they're trying to get that education, and you're giving it away for free, man. It's all out there, which is amazing. So tell us, like, what you do in this world today, why you are given these awards for Meetup, why you are, you know, just recognized as one of the leaders in content creation, podcast, giving away education, all that stuff. Maybe just tell us a little bit about that world and how you got started doing that.
Yeah, and I know Rod Cleef gave me the Ads Massive Value Award too in 2018, maybe. But yeah, why? I feel like there's a lot of benefit that you will get by being the leader of a meetup, or being a host of a podcast. And I do both. And a lot of people don't understand all these benefits. And so I want to go on a rant or a tangent, and I want to speak from my heart. And it's going to be like,
take as much time as you want.
Pouring into you guys, because there are so many people that don't understand the real benefits that you get from doing these things. If I didn't have a podcast, I never would have gotten an award for Ads Massive Value. I never would have been recognized by Think Realty Magazine. I never would have I likely wouldn't have closed three deals that put me into the Hall of Fame for that. Maybe I could have closed one. I don't know. But my life changed because I have a meetup and a podcast. And a lot of people are like, yeah, but that's so much work. It's so much work to kind of do this. And I'm like, but you don't understand. You don't see the real true benefits. And so I want to kind of lay them out for you since I'm on this tangent. And there are some clear crystal benefits that most people don't see. Number one, if with a podcast, I have a benefit of when I'm just connecting with somebody, one person that has never heard my podcast, and he and I or she and I are just talking, I'm getting to know them and they're getting to know me, and somehow the podcast comes up. Maybe I say, oh, I've got an episode that would probably help you with that. Or maybe it's, oh, I interviewed somebody on my podcast that answered that question. I think he said XYZ. Well, what ends up happening as I'm talking to this person is they say, wait, you have a podcast? And they pause and they stop and they get excited. And they're like, what? You have a podcast? Because even right now, podcasting is cool. Podcasting is still cool. It was cooler last year. It's going to be maybe less cool in 5 years from now. But right now, today, it impresses people. And so you're just speaking with a woman, a man, about just whatever. And they find out that you have a podcast. They find out that you're an authority on something. And they may or may not. Well, first off, they're going to already think higher of you, more highly of you. Secondly, they may start listening to your podcast. Maybe no one ever has listened to your podcast. Mm-hmm. Maybe nobody has. But all of a sudden, you're sitting with a potential passive investor or somebody who might be selling a deal. And they may go in. And what I did, I have one example. I was talking to this guy and I just said, here, let me, do you have an iPhone? He says, yeah. I said, let me just kind of subscribe to it for you. So I went in and I subscribed to it. And I showed him what it does. And I said, all you do is click this. Well, 2 months later, this guy calls me and he says, Adam, I've listened to 60 of your episodes. Oh, 60.
Yeah.
And this was only like no more than 2 months. I've listened to 60 of your episodes and I want to invest with you. And I didn't have to do anything else. I didn't have to do anything extra. So that's benefit number one, is you just get more credibility and past investors. And people can get to know your personality without you having long conversations with them, because they have long conversations with you.
Yeah, they get exposure and they know your voice and they know your take on it. And, you know, they start to, you realize, oh, I like this individual. And, you know, he's got good wisdom, good insight. I like this guy. They check him more. So that's good.
So that's one of three that I want to share with you. The second of three is the knowledge that you get. So when you, like right now, Abel, you're asking anything you want to ask. And some of them are good for your listener.
And
some
of them are good for you. Taking notes, man. I'm taking notes. Yeah. It's kind of hard to see my book here, but
it's
there.
So as I record episodes, and I've done about 500 and something episodes, 520 or something like that.
Wow.
And most of these are interviews with other people. And so I've pretty much interviewed at least 400 successful investors, and I've been able to ask them anything that I wanted to ask them. So you gain amount of knowledge more quickly when you have a podcast. Mm-hmm. And you can't put a price on that. Mm-hmm. You can't put a price on investors chasing you. You can't put a price on the knowledge that you get that is so much superseded anything you could get anywhere else. But here's the tricky one, the third one. It's your network. It's the way that you grow your own network. Everyone who's listening, I bet you they've heard your network is your net worth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And many of the people listening have probably heard you are the average of the five people you hang around the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm hanging around very successful multifamily investors each and every day or several times in one day to record my episodes, if I'm hanging out with those investors, my network is going up. My friends are going up. I can call people like Hal Elrod on his cell phone, who wrote the book Miracle Morning.
Yep.
I can call Joe Fairless. I can call practically any podcaster you know, even Kevin Bupp from you know, the Mobile Home Park Investing and the Passive Investing show that he has as well, like the cash flow one. It's like these people become my friends and I care about them and I pour into their businesses. I try to help them as much as I can. And now if I need something, I just call. Okay. And if I can throw a bonus besides the passive investors chasing you, the knowledge that you get and the network, here's the next thing you get is exposure. And it sounds crazy, but check this out. Because you have a meetup or a podcast or a conference, or you wrote a book, just because you have some kind of thought leadership platform,
mm-hmm.
you automatically get invited on other people's thought leadership platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Other people interview you for their books. I've been interviewed for books. Other people interview you for their meetups, for their podcasts, for their conferences. I've spoken to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And it's not because I'm a great guy. It's because I'm a lucky person who has who thought about having a podcast. Everyone's a great guy or a great girl. I mean, there's some bad apples. But if you look at the main human out there, they're intriguing. They're inspiring. They are helpful. They are smart.
Everybody's got their own unique story.
We all are.
You know? Yep.
I'm no more unique than anyone else. It's the only difference is that I have this platform that I've been trying to grow. And because I've got the platform, other people bring me on theirs.
Yep.
And it makes it even grow. It makes your network even grow. It makes your exposure grow. It makes more past investors chase you because of that. And that's a piece where people are like, man, I don't have time to start a podcast. I'm like, how are you ever going to raise money? How are you ever going to raise a dime of capital? How are you going to get those deals? If you do it my way, Abel's way, by launching a podcast or starting a meetup or whatever, the network grows so quickly mm-hmm. once you do this. It's not just because you have a podcast. And people are like hung up on, oh, I only have 50 listeners or something. A lot of people only have 50 listeners. But here's the thing. Those 50 love you and they stay with you. And it still allows you to get on other people's podcasts. And it still allows you that credibility with that past investor. And it still allows you to get that knowledge by interviewing anyone that you want ever. And it still allows you to grow that network. I mean, sorry. I've never been so passionate on a podcast before, but I just see so many people trying not to start podcasts because they think there's too many out there or whatever they think, but like they're shooting themselves in the foot. And if they don't start a thought leadership of some, any kind before 2021, 2022, they're going to be passed up by just the people that have.
Man,
and that's what's happening now today.
COVID has absolutely accelerated this. I work with a personal coach, professional coach that had a commercial real estate background as well. So I meet with him weekly and he serves big Fortune 500 companies and they're reaching out to him right now to train their sales reps. And like one of them was like, it's a canned tomato company. And they hired him to go help their sales reps get more social, get more visibility. And I thought about this. And I go, man, they're selling canned tomatoes and they're hiring them to get their sales reps out there. I go, if the canned tomato guys are trying to get more internet virtual, you know, out there, then we definitely need to launch. And your mindset, man, I'm very appreciative of the passion there because you know, for nine months, I said, I'm going to start a podcast. And then you have those fear and self-doubts. It's like, well, is anybody, there's too many, no one's going to listen and all that stuff. And that's because I went through the same starting a meetup. and, you know, co-hosting a meetup and getting out there in our local community. And we did that for a year prior. And I realized, oh, this exactly what you mentioned. It's that platform. It builds your exposure. People get to know, like, and trust you. And then on that that last note, I've heard this two or three times this year, and it was an old question: know, like, and trust. In that old saying, people do business with people they know, like, and trust. What's the most important one of those, you know, of those categories? And I have always said trust. I mean, for 20 years in sales, you know, B2B sales, helping people, servant leader, I'm trust. Absolutely. And the question that was posed back to me, well, if they don't know you, how are they ever going to like and trust you? And so, man, it's been all these spurred, like, got to go, got to just make it happen. So everything you say, man, reigns true. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Love it. Hello, hello. This is Abel Pacheco, your host for the Five Talents Podcast. After listening to a few episodes, deep down, do you know that multifamily and commercial real estate investing is one of the best ways to create financial freedom? If you said yes to that question and you are where I was a few years ago, then I'd absolutely love to connect with you. A few years ago, I started personally consuming a ton of real estate education. I traveled all over the country, as many real estate conferences and seminars that I could go to. I took 200 plus hours of real estate education. I spent thousands of dollars along the way. And I did this because I knew the path to financial freedom for me and my family was through commercial real estate and syndication. So if you've made a similar decision, I'd love to connect with you. And potentially in the future, I'd love to partner with you as well. Take a moment, go to 5tcre.com/invest, and I'd love to set up a time to talk. Hey, man, well, on that note, right, the different places people can go and reach you. I want to ask you a few questions, a few more questions. I'm going to keep you here. But while we're here, where do people go to reach out to you today? Where, you know, can you share the, you know, the podcast or website, or what, how do I get in touch with you? How to get more into your world?
Yeah. Well, raisingmoneycoach.com is where people can reach out if they want consulting on just being able to attract more capital. I do a lot of branding and help people launch podcasts and things like that, but they can find it at raisingmoneycoach.com. And if it's coming up, October is coming up to every single first weekend of October, we have a 3 or 4 day boot camp. It's called Raising Money Summit. And we've got speakers like Annie Dickerson, who's in our program, Julie Lamb, who's in our program, trying to think who else, Tate Seymour, who's in a program. There's Neil Bawa, Vinny Chopra. Whew, we've got some heavy hitters. Raj Gupta, who's in our mastermind, Anna Simpson, who's in our mastermind, and a bunch of just other amazing people that are going to be speaking at the Raising Money Summit. And so if that's something that they want, is where we kind of try to take everything that we teach in our coaching and consulting, where it's about, there's four steps. Let me give you these few.
Please.
Step one, how do you get in front of your investors? Because Abel, you're right. Know, like, and trust. If they don't know you, they can never like you. They can never trust you. And if you're likable and trustworthy, then all you got to do is just get people to know you. So day one, we teach just how do you get in front of your investors. We teach some tricks on social media that allow more engagement, that gets more people to see, more eyeballs on what you're posting on social. We teach on how to get a podcast launched so that more people hear it. There's a lot of people launching podcasts and nobody's listening, right? So we just help to make sure that you can have a better following. And we talk about webinars and other things like that. On day two, we just teach about how to really use what's called a lead magnet. And mm-hmm. all of this is valuable to you, even if you're not attending the summit. Like, the four steps are valuable to you. So I hope you're paying attention. So the second step is you got to get people to say that they want to be on your list. They give you their name and email in exchange for something. So we teach you how to do that so that the most amount of people are saying that they like you. First, we teach them how to know you. Now we're teaching them how to like you, how to say, I want to be on your list. And then we teach you how to stay in front of them and how often to email them. We teach you everything you need to know. If you want to raise millions of dollars, if you just want to raise a little bit of money, there's easier ways. But if you want to raise millions and never be limited, then this is the process. Day three, we teach what software you need to be able to manage your list, to stay in contact with your list, and to be able to let them know what moves you're making in your company. Day four is all about how do you call the capital. So the step four is calling for the capital, asking for the money, running the webinar, getting people on the webinar, knowing what to say on the webinar, what matters to past investors, and how to follow up, how to share with them. Even we go into sales psychology that helps with the influence so that you're not shooting yourself in the foot when you're asking for capital. So that's what we do once a year. October, first weekend of October. We're doing it this year, of course. We've been doing it for a few years, but they can get the tickets at raisingmoneysummit.com, raisingmoneysummit.com.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for that. I was going to ask earlier how new general partners can give some advice for new general partners. But that's it. Like you don't need any other advice. If you want to be a general partner, you want to be a co-sponsor on a larger syndication, you want to raise some capital, kind of get started. Like that was just the outline for it. You know, get some exposure, get some people to know, like, and trust you, you know, and either start your podcast or write your ebook or give away that, you know, giveaway, get some people that will, you know, join you and they start to like you and trust you. And then you're off to the races. So rewind that, get your pen out then and start taking some more notes. Help me with the passive investor. So for those passive investors, I think I've spent 13, 14 years in IT hosting. I've had a good network of people that, you know, have maybe seen me invest over the years, and, you know, they're grinding. They're either salespeople or engineers in IT sales, IT spot, and they've got a little bit of money and they're trying to figure out, what do I do with it? How do I know what to invest, where to invest? And, you know, maybe give us a little insight for the passive investors that are listening, just jumping in their first couple of deals.
Perfect. Well, you know, most of what I'm about to share is opinion only. It's my opinion, and I hope that there is some weight to it and that it resonates with a few people. In my opinion is that you don't put all of your eggs in one basket. Now, I've heard other people say you do put all of your eggs in one basket and then you watch it like a hawk. For me, I still like to be diversified. I still like to spread risk because there's risk everywhere. And regardless of what how much time we're putting into things, I still think that it's good. So what I mean by that is, if you are a passive investor, something to consider is I wouldn't take all of your money out of the stock market overnight. I wouldn't just like completely empty the stock market and put 100% of everything into multifamily. Now, I think syndications are stronger. I think they're safer. I think they're more resilient. I think they're stronger. I think you get better returns. I think that you're adding more to the world. Like, I think you're doing more good in the world by doing a syndication investment than you are in the stocks. But I'm not saying that anyone should take everything out in one day. What I would suggest is that you diversify a little bit. So let's just pretend like you had a good chunk of $50,000-ish or $100,000 that you didn't have to pull it all out of the stock market, but you could be able to diversify and get into your first syndication. That's good, in my opinion. Depending on how much money you have, I'd put a portion of it into a syndication with somebody that you trust. Now that's the opinion part. Now here's the part that is surefire, and you need to do it. When getting into a passive investment, when you're going with Coca-Cola, like when you're doing stocks, you know what I mean? You don't have the same type of rigid, I guess, what's the word for it? Due diligence that you have to take on there, right? You got to still, but like you've got people in place that are going to do that. But when you're investing in a syndication, you kind of got to do the due diligence on yourself. And there's three main things that you need to do due diligence on. And most people don't know all of these things. Most people kind of just say, well, I like the asset class and I like the guy who's running it, so I'm going to put all my trust. And I don't resonate with that. And I hope you don't either. What I want you to do is I want you to know these three things that you need to do your due diligence on. And the first one is the team and its track record. The second one is the market, which everyone seems to neglect. There's past investors that are invested in like seven different markets, and they are clueless as to any of those markets. So in a minute, I think I'm going to share a few ways to just look at a market. Mm-hmm. But overall, you gotta do your due diligence on the team. And one of the things that gets missed is background checks. Number two, you gotta do your own due diligence on the market. You have to understand the market and some market fundamentals before you put your money into some random market. What I see past investors doing all the time is chasing returns. They chase the returns by going with a brand new person that's never done this, but they're promising 25% annualized returns. And they're like, well, that sounds better than going with a really good person that's only promising 12. And it's not. You're going to lose money. So anyway, I see people chasing the wrong markets that don't have any good market fundamentals. So I do want to share that with the passive investor in a moment. But the third thing that you really ought to be looking at itself is the building, the actual property. Is it a C-class in a C-class area? Is it a C-class in a D-class area? Is it a B-class in an A-class area? What's the business plan? Is the foundation good? Is the roof good? How, you know, when was it replaced last? Is the drainage good? Because a lot of people don't pay attention to that, and all of a sudden there's drainage coming to the property, which is going to cause lots and lots and lots of problems. Does the property have the right insurance? Are they insured properly for flood or earthquake or fire or whatever it is? And a lot of people are missing those points. They feel like they can just trust somebody. And I hope that they spend a little bit of more time just trying to understand. But going back to the second one, which was the market, there's a few things. Hopefully I can give you five solid things that are true and never changing. The first one would be that the area was growing 1% year over year. The second one, and by the way, that's for at least 2 years. And by the way, if it just grew 7% this year, that doesn't mean it's a good thing. 1% year over year, consistent, steady growth is better than just one spike recently. It's not, you're not averaging 1%. It's consistent at least 1%. The second one would probably be that there's job growth in, so the population growth, number one, 1%. Number two, job growth, 2%. I love how we're explaining it because it's easy to memorize. So job growth, you want to see that jobs are diverse, but they're also growing year over year for at least the last 2 years. The next one that you want to be able to do, and you can do this on your own. If you're a past investor, you can do this stuff without having to worry.
You can go to City Data. You can go to U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. You can go to the Economic Development Committee in the city. A lot of it. You can use Google. So, yes.
All right. So, the third one I want to talk about is schools. So, as far as schools go, what we usually do in ours is we make sure that none of the schools are a 4 out of 5, below a 4 out of 5. But I would say for the passive investor, they should put a minimum, at least that all of the K through 12, all of those schools are 3 out of 5 or greater. The higher you get, the better. And here's why. The worse the schools, the higher the crime. And so a lot of people are like, check the crime rate, check the crime rate. That's what they always say, check the crime rate. Well, checking the schools is better than checking the crime rate, because I don't care what the crime rate is today. If the schools are great, the crime rate's going to get better over time. And also the governors, especially during re-election, what they'll do is they'll just lock up a bunch of people and they'll show that crime went down. Again, just like we talked about with the market population, 7% in 1 year isn't necessarily good. Crime rate changing overnight isn't necessarily good. There's other ways that they can do that. So if you look at the schools first, and my company does 4 out of 5 schools, we do schools that score 4 out of 5 stars or greater. Mm-hmm. That'll be huge for you, because you'll know that the crime is always going to be going down. We'll just stop at those three so we can get other pieces into the podcast, but hopefully that is valuable to the listener.
100%. So I'm writing my first ebook right now, and people can go to, you know, my website and download it, or we're just about to finalize it. Anyways, I'm like, please say the ones I wrote about. Adam.
Oh, good.
And then I'm like, oh yes, thank you, Lord. Team, market, deal, and a lot of the same population growth. And as this is the funny part of just being a normal, an investor like myself that is always kind of that worrisome, like, man, am I doing the right deal? Am I finding the right opportunity? You know, that fear or doubt starts to creep in. And then, you know, I just knowing from another expert, like, oh, I am looking at the right mechanics. I am looking at the right fundamentals. We're out doing the right things. And so hopefully anybody listening, this is a great way for you to go back, you know, through maybe the past deals you've invested with or the future ones. Every single cycle that you do, whether you're investigating a new deal or, you know, thinking about, you know, your past ones or how to move forward, these are all the things that you need to just get really good at the basics, and it'll help you on every single cycle. So, man, thank you very much, Adam. I appreciate, man, all your time. Is there anything else that I haven't hit on that you really wanted to share? Anything that I didn't ask about, or, you know, anything to highlight, provide some exposure, you know, to that you're doing today? Anything, man, and the floor is yours, and don't worry about time.
Well, okay. Well, I'll just try to just add value to those passive investors with the other two things, if you don't mind. So
yeah,
another out of the five, let's just say that number four is that the population has at least 100,000 people. Now my team, we only go for 1 million and larger, but if you have an area that is like 1,000 people, which some people are investing in these types of areas. I don't know why, but 1% is just 10 people. It's like 10 people moved there. 10 people, 100 people can move out, and it's ridiculous. So for those metrics that I shared to work, you've got to have a population in the MSA mm-hmm. of at least 100,000. So mm-hmm. that basically means, like, I'm from Utah. I lived in Kaysville, Utah. I live in Denver now, but I lived in a place called Kaysville, Utah. I grew up, went to Davis High School. Now, Kaysville itself at the time only had like 30-ish thousand. I'm sure it has like 60-ish thousand now. But would you invest in Kaysville? Yes, you would. Why? Because its MSA is part of Salt Lake City, because it's in the suburbs of Salt Lake City. So so I want to just make sure that that's completely clear. Mm-hmm. The next thing that I wanted to share is and this is going to be a little bit more complicated, and so I'm going to try to share it in just a way that it's a mindset for the past investor, to something for them to think about. And that is to make sure that the median income in the area is right around 33% of your apartment rents.
Mm-hmm.
You basically want the average income to be able to just afford your apartments. And it sounds crazy, because you're like, oh, I found an area that they're making like five times the amount of my apartments. That's not a good area. And you're like, well, why? Well, it's because those people can now afford houses and they're less likely to be in your apartments. So what you're looking for is you want the average, the median, to be right around your apartment unit price, your mm-hmm. average apartment unit price. So if you have like two beds and three beds, you'll just average it to like 1,000. So you'll say, if that's 1,000 a month, I want them to be making 3,000 a month, mm-hmm. not 5,000 a month, and not 2,000 a month. And if you can find that by looking at median income and your average apartment unit price,
mm-hmm.
if it fits into there, you'll have a really solid number. So I think that would be another really, really good one that people miss.
Perfect. I've got that one too, Mr. Adam. So I'm excited.
Nice.
Yeah, just to you know, if you're making 45K a year as the average in the area, and 30% of it, that's 15K, divide that by 12 and you're at, I don't know, what, 1,100-ish or whatever. And then you're like, oh, that's my rent. You're in a good, ideal kind of spot for that. So to break that down, man, that all of these are great nuggets. So anything else?
Okay, absorption rate. Here's another one that people are forgetting. And it kind of goes with population growth, but it basically goes with how many units that you have on hand today and how many people are going to be able to take in and rent those units, because there's a lot of places that have a negative absorption rate. And that's not because the population isn't growing. It's because they're building too fast. Mm-hmm. And so it's just another metric that you can, that a passive investor could look at. Maybe that's number six that the passive investor could really look at. If they wanted to create a checklist from those six things that we just shared, I think that would really help them to make sure that they were going to have their money in a safe spot.
Yeah, really awesome. Well, man, thank you so much, really, for everything, for all your time, all the expertise. I think people are going to have take a lot of value from this. There's more than a few nuggets to go rewind and replay and jot down some notes. And, you know, the last thing, if I could leave our listeners and viewers with, is at some point, you know, through your career in real estate investing, you kind of went from, you know, just average kind of real estate investor to like, okay, now people view you as you're the leader, you're the thought expert. You've got podcasts, you've just explained, you're the educator now, and with some really big names associated that are helping you, contributing to you. What was the mindset that allowed you to say, you know what, I could do this, or was it a fear you were breaking through? Were you always confident? It was just a matter of action. What kind of mindset did it take? And then we'll leave with that.
That is a super good question, Abel. I'm really glad you asked that, because there's got to be so many people that come from where I came from. And just to give you an example of who I am, I've always believed that persistence and determination were everything. I've always believed that being completely relentless, never quitting, and outworking your competition was a way that could get you results. And so that extra work ethic has benefited me, because I don't mind putting in the work. The second part is the part around all of the inner dialogue that we all have. And I don't know a single person that doesn't have fear and doubts in their inner dialogue. It's difficult to get away from that. And for me, I found a way to try to think critically of the outcome that something will give me, and try to ignore my doubts as I'm starting a new podcast or starting a new meetup group or speaking on stage. But I'll just let the listener know that because I might sound like I'm confident or whatever, it doesn't mean that I have much more confidence than everybody else. Like when you're with your friend, when you're with your spouse, when you're with your kids, you are yourself. And it takes a lot to be able to be that person with other people. It takes a lot to become who you truly are, but in front of everybody. And for me, I've worked on effortlessly trying to get rid of that inner dialogue, the nerves, the fear, and allowing myself to be who I am. Now, I'm naturally somebody who stuttered when I was growing up. I stuttered, and I would stutter like right now on this podcast. It's just that I have found a way to kind of channel a more comfortable me to just speak with you. And part of that comes from me understanding that it's not about me. And this is the part that generally gets me choked up. I'm going to try not to cry on your show, but it's the part where I understand that there's like a, and here I go choking up. I understand there's a bigger picture, like there's a larger piece than I am, and I'm an instrument, you know, regardless of what type of, you know, beliefs you have in what's going on up there or down here. I fully believe that I'm an instrument in something a little bit bigger, and that all of us ought to be channeling what we're really good at and what we enjoy and what we like and what we can do for others. And so for me, I've tried to channel even though I'm a shy person, more introverted than you would ever believe, even though I'm shy, even though, like, when I grew up, I was the person playing into the puddle by myself while everybody else was talking about, I don't know, just dumb jokes to me. And I was over here by myself, and just, like, I didn't get those. I didn't understand what they were doing, what they were talking about. And that sometimes makes me feel less than other people. That sometimes allows me to feel vulnerable. That oftentimes has me not want to look at somebody in the eye when I'm speaking to them, like right in the eye, because I feel like they'll see into me that I'm not like them. But what's interesting is I'm not the only person that feels this way. I bet you feel this way, Abel, and I bet the listener who's listening right now, whether they're driving or exercising or sitting on their couch, I bet they feel this way too, because we all do. I'm not unique in this. And what it took for me to put myself in front of a room and to have the gall to host a workshop around investing and to create the one podcast and then sell it and create another podcast and to host this massive event with 1,000 people every year, or 600 last year, but it's going to start being bigger because, yeah, it just is. What it took was me deciding that this was ultimately good for our business. And that if no one else was going to offer this value, it had to be me. And so I know that sounds, I know that this whole topic needs to be spoken in circles and needs to be thought about in circles, because each and every piece relies on the other pieces. And so it has to come full circle for us to really start getting the value out of it. So for a listener who's considering making a podcast and is like me, I'm not the most eloquent person, but some people say that I am, which is blows my mind, because I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm not at all as eloquent as most of the people out there. Most people, they read more than I. I'm dyslexic, so I've barely read any books besides this year, because audio books. But when it comes down to it, if you can understand that you're doing this for a bigger purpose, a bigger reason, and so regardless of how dumb you sound, because I feel like I sound dumb all the time, regardless of how dumb you sound or you think you sound, if you have your heart in it, if you are doing it for the right reason to benefit others, we stop stuttering so much. We stop feeling embarrassed and judged so much, because even though I stumble across these words, at the end of the day, you feel it in your heart what I'm saying. And that's because I'm speaking from my heart and not concerned about how dumb I sound. I hope that makes sense.
It helps a bunch of people, I am sure, my friend. It made a lot of sense to me. And a lot of those points, you know, that you mentioned resonated, is people have that fear, you know, inside of them, and anxiety, you know, worry, some people, and, you know, some people show it less or more, and then you put them in the wrong situation, it's going to come out more. And man, if you can kind of overcome those things and realize there's a lot more than just, you know, me, we're a community, a bigger community of people, individuals. And, you know, you had mentioned, you know, not sure where it comes from for you, for me, very much faith driven and, you know, believer in the Lord. And so there's a lot of those things that come to me where I'm like, man, I'm kind of worried about saying this. I don't know if I should. And then something's saying, you just got to get it out, like right now. And the more obedient I am to that, the more that it's actually benefited them, me, us, others. And, you know, that's where a lot of it comes from for me. But I have to tell myself the same things. I'm like, Lord, I believe, take away my unbelief in, you know, and that's where it is for me. But man, everything resonated that she said. I think a lot of people are going to find a lot of value just in your last statement. And man, that's, Thank you very much. It was an amazing opportunity to have this. I'm excited about sharing it. And great interview. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Adam Adams.
Adam Abel Adams.
AAA. Yeah. And again, my name is Abel Pacheco. I was your host for Five Talents Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can go reach us at 5tcre.com. We've got, you know, a number of these podcast interviews that I've been doing, that I've interviewed others. We do a couple week, you know, biweekly webinars now with post-COVID. We can't meet in person for our meetups. And all that stuff is on our website. So if you want some education, some insight, and you want to reach out, if you have questions for Adam, he'd love to hear from you. He wants you in his world, whether it's an investor, somebody, another coach in the multifamily side. If you have questions for me, I want the same thing. So I look forward to having you. And thank you very much. If you heard anything you like today, make sure to subscribe to our podcast, give us a rating, put some goodness for Adam, and let us know what you like. We love feedback. So thank you very much again, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Five Talents Podcast with your host, myself, Abel Pacheco. Each week, we're going to bring you interviews from industry experts and commercial real estate investors who followed their dreams and achieved massive success. Before you leave, let me ask you a few questions. Did you enjoy this episode? Did you learn something valuable? Was your mind stretched to what's possible and what you can achieve? Do you want other experts just like the one you heard today? If you answered yes to any or all of those questions, then please take a moment to subscribe to the Five Talents Podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and most importantly, leave us a written review. Tell us what you liked, tell us your favorite guest, give us any feedback. I'm excited to learn and improve so you can get a more valuable show. So thank you again for subscribing to the Five Talents Podcast.